Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from across Los Angeles are Andy Dunbar, who's Chief Compliance Officer at Herbalife Nutrition, and Nick Morgan, who's a partner at Paul Hastings. The two of them, along with Jose Sanchez, will be speaking at the 2021 Compliance Institute on the topic, What the SEC Expects from Your Internal Investigation. Former SEC enforcement attorneys share their insights. First, Nick, Andy, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
No, thank you, Adam. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure as well. Andy, let's start with you. Outside investigations by the SEC often begin with a whistleblower complaint. And according to both QTAM attorneys and the SEC, those whistleblowers more often than not first brought up their issues internally. They were either ignored, the claim was acted upon in a matter that wasn't timely enough for the complainant, or the internal investigation failed to find anything wrong. How can we improve the process to better capitalize on the internal whistleblower?
You know, I think that's a really good question, because as a threshold matter, this question actually underscores the importance of not just having a robust investigation management program, which we all know we need, but it's also to ensure that you have discipline in your program. And so what do I mean by that? Let me take a step back first. It's that, of course, we all want first crack at an investigation. Particularly as it relates to whistleblowers. In every investigation management program, we want to be proactive and not reactive. And this is especially important when it comes to self-reporting, because the more you can self-report, you get to control the narrative versus somebody else going in there. They tell their narrative and then you're reacting to their narrative. So first and foremost, you want the people to come to you first. How do you do that? You need a speak up culture. You need reporting avenues that are easy and accessible for the individuals. And of course, you need to have sufficient awareness of the hotline program so people know where to go and what to do. And that addresses, however, only part of your question. The next part, when I mentioned discipline, it gets to issues of it wasn't timely enough of an investigation, or the internal investigation failed to find anything wrong. That's where the discipline, I use the term discipline. That's where the discipline comes in. And what I mean by that is you have someone monitoring the process of the investigation. That ensures matters don't slip through the cracks, because they can easily. They get lost in an email shuffle. You make sure they get signed in an efficient manner. You want to make sure all investigations are moving forward. When you have a hybrid approach, it's really easy for a investigator to hit a roadblock and say, you know what, this is going to go on the back burner. But to have somebody there just reminding them in a nice way, hey, can you get this investigation moving forward? And of course, it's really good to have somebody review the final outcome of an investigation, so it just doesn't get done and filed. You have somebody give it the smell test, the reasonableness test. Hey, what were the right people talked to? Were the right documents looked at? Does this look like it was a proper investigation that came to the right conclusion? And if you build all those things into the program, that really protects you should you have a whistleblower down the line.
Hey, Andy and Adam, I'm going to take a slightly different tack outside defense counsel. I agree with everything you said, Andy, but I want to raise an additional point that comes up quite frequently with our clients. And that is a large number of the tips, and I'm talking about SEC tips, internal tips, both, are not meritorious. So it's important to consider what to do with a non-meritorious tip. And the reason I know many tips are non-meritorious is just anecdotally, but also the SEC's own numbers back this up. The SEC has done a great job of advertising their bounty program, of publishing the numbers of tips that they receive. They receive a monumental number of tips. They investigate a very small number of those tips, and of the small number they investigate, an even smaller number result in an enforcement action or a bounty. And I think the same would be true at companies. Ironically, the companies that have the most accessible whistleblower tip hotlines are going to generate the most tips, and that necessarily will mean that some of those tips are not meritorious. So I think an important consideration, because you know, most often when we talk hypothetically about a whistleblower program, we're contemplating a meritorious tip and what should be done. In the case of a non-meritorious tip, which comes up a lot, it's important to document what was done with that tip and why it was concluded that the tip didn't have merit. So it's it's not something that's often thought about in constructing an internal whistleblower program, but I think it's very important because it occurs all the time.
It does. And it's one of those things. There's also the question of, even for the non-meritorious tip, how do you get back to the person in such a way that says, we looked, there's no there there in this case, but doesn't dissuade them from keeping their eyes open in case they see something real the next time from reporting it. Now, whether a tip is meritorious or not, retaliation is always a concern, especially once an investigation becomes public. Andy, how can you best protect the whistleblower?
I think it goes without saying that obviously having a documented anti-retaliation policy in place is really important for two reasons. One, if an employee has any concerns or during the investigation, you could point the employee to that policy. But also, when the SEC or the DOJ or some other regulator comes a knock in, you could show them to say, "Hey, look, we actually have a written policy in place, and we have sufficient awareness surrounding the policy." One of the ways I think to really promote that aspect and protect the person from anti-retaliation is getting the word out there during the investigation, and letting people know again about the policy. I found this funny. We actually just did an anti-bribery training, a global training, and part of the training, of course, deals with your speak up cultures, deals with the reporting hotline. And it says, "Hey, everybody, if you see something, report it. All improper conduct, please report it." And then it says something along the lines of, "And if you're feeling you're retaliated against, make another report." And it sounds funny, but it's actually really true. It's to let people know that if you are subject to retaliation, let us know. We want to do something about it. We want to make sure that doesn't happen, because if people feel like they can't report without retaliation, they're not going to report. And that undercuts the entire investigative process. So one of the things we do is, in every investigation, in almost every interview, we remind everybody we're talking to, "Hey, just remember, we have a strict anti-retaliation policy." That goes to the person doing the report. That goes to the people we're talking to, who may or may not be the ones who would be the people who do the retaliation, as well as the person who reports, to say, "Hey, look, we have this. If you hear this, let us know." And when you have that personal connection with them, whether it be at the end of the investigation, you send the note and say, "Hey, we concluded it was substantiated or unsubstantiated, but we do have this anti-retaliation policy." If you just do a follow-up with them, hey, just wanted to remind you, this is the case at our organization. Report it if something happens to you. We're behind you. We support you." And that seems to really take well with people. They seem to really appreciate that, at least in my experience. And then, even if you follow up later in a month or 2 months, "Hey, how are you doing? Just checking on the program. Did anything happen? Are you okay?" And when you have those type of check-ins, I think it really bodes well, because that spreads throughout the organization that, "Hey, this is a real program. It has real discipline in it. It's trustworthy, and we could rely on it."
I'll just add to what you're saying, Andy, because I agree with what you say. As outside counsel, I often am surprised about the lack of awareness about what constitutes retaliation. There's some obvious stuff that you can go and find in the statutory language from Dodd-Frank, the things we would all consider retaliation: demoting, firing, discriminating, harassing, that sort of thing. But what many people don't realize is that the SEC promulgated a rule that expanded what can constitute retaliation to include impeding a whistleblower's ability to talk to regulators in the SEC. And then the SEC has, over the last few years, brought enforcement actions to aggressively apply that term of impeding, so that now things like inquiring about the identity of the whistleblower might constitute impeding, which might constitute retaliation. So I think one of the things companies need to be aware of and sort of learn about is, what is retaliation beyond the obvious, and what's defined as retaliation in the statute?
And one of the most pernicious parts of retaliation is there's the many subtle ways that it can be carried out, which nevertheless has a harmful effect on a person's career. Now, Nick, let me follow up with you on something. When the SEC comes knocking, it's likely that the general counsel's office will take the lead while working with outside counsel. What should compliance be doing to help?
Well, of course, each company might be structured slightly differently, but I can say that one of the biggest challenges in communicating with the SEC relates to data preservation, data collection, data processing. Some companies will have their compliance folks be part of that discussion and some won't. If they are, that is almost always one of the number one bones of contention in communicating with the SEC. Did you look everywhere? Did you capture all of the ESR, the electronic data? So to the extent compliance is involved in that, it's very helpful. The other thing I would say is that at the end of almost every conversation with the SEC's enforcement division, there's going to be some effort to describe remediation efforts by the company to address whatever it is that caught the SEC's attention. And so to the extent compliance can be thinking about that, okay, here's an issue that's been presented by a whistleblower or just in an SEC subpoena or what have you. If there really is an issue here, how will compliance modify or suggest that the company modify its practices to address the issue? So that's another area where compliance can play an important role.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And you know, from my perspective, if the SEC comes a knock in, one of the first things I would do as compliance is I would go back to the hotline and say, hey, you know, did we know about this matter? And it might, maybe they reported it, or maybe it was a sideshow to another matter that was reported. And just knowing the SEC, there's a lot of sometimes Monday morning quarterbacking that occurs where they look back and say, oh, well, you should have known X, Y, and Z based on what's in your hotline matters. So I think first and foremost, I would go back through the hotline. Did we know about it? And is it in here? If you see anything that's close or it was reported, I would then pull out the policy, walk through step by step, because the SEC is going to ask that, you know, was your policy followed? And you want to make sure everything's buttoned up. Did we follow, you know, did we follow our process? Did we respond back to the reporter? Was the investigation closed in the system the appropriate way? And then I think what's a really important factor of this is, as Nick talked about, remedial action. That's usually if, you know, at the very end. Here, as part of the investigation, there's very often times we have recommended remedial actions by the investigator. So one of the things I would do is find out, were there any remedial actions that were suggested at the time of the investigation, and were those remedial actions actually acted upon? Hopefully they will. Hopefully we all have policies and or at least procedures in place to check that, to make sure that those remedial actions do happen. But that's one of the first things the SEC is gonna ask for and look to is at that time you had that remedial action, was it executed on? And they'll take it from there.
You know, it's certainly worth thinking about the idea that remediation, we tend to think about as something that comes at the end of the process, but it actually probably shouldn't be. It should be part of the ongoing efforts to figure out what's going on here and start getting a better handle on things. So finally, Nick, are there any trends in enforcement actions that compliance teams should take as hints for how to improve their programs?
Well, I have two thoughts on that, Adam. First, we know the SEC for several years now has been increasingly using data analytics for a variety of purposes. One of the ways they use analytics is to look across an industry or a bunch of peers to look for outliers. And outliers for various things, whether it's revenue recognition or cybersecurity policies or whatever, might give them an indication of where to look. So being consistent with your peers, having compliance policies and having financial reporting, internal controls that are up to peer standards certainly helps. It's not a free pass, and sometimes everyone might have the same kind of policy and it's faulty across the entire industry. But being below the industry standard is certainly something that will catch the SEC's attention, whether through the use of data analytics or just on a specific inquiry.
Yeah, and Adam, from another perspective, at least from an in-house perspective, one of the things we love doing is using recent SEC matters as guidance and teaching tools.
And it's always good in compliance to learn from the mistakes of others. There's a lot of lessons that can be taken away that can help improve your program. Well, Andy, Nick, thank you both for sharing these insights with us today. And I look forward to your session at the 2021 Compliance and Ethics Institute. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective. Now, let's talk about retaliation, which is always a concern whether the claim is substantiated or not. Especially once an investigation becomes public, it can be very difficult to protect someone from retaliation. How can you best protect the whistleblower? Now, Nick, let's start with you this time. When the SEC comes knocking, it's likely the general counsel's office will take the lead while working with outside counsel. What should compliance be doing to help? finally, are there any trends in enforcement actions that compliance teams should take as hints for how to improve their programs? Okay. Well, Nick, Andy, I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk to us today. And I want to thank the two of you, as well as Jose, for speaking at the 2021 Compliance and Ethics Institute. I look forward to seeing you there. I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.